Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. My name is Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest today, whom we'll call Richie Rich, played his first hand of blackjack at Caesars in Atlantic City some 39 years ago. And he can still play there under his real name. Richie Rich, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I think we should clarify that you're playing with an edge. A lot of people who've been playing for 40 years who are not playing with an edge, they can play everywhere.
Well, I wasn't playing with an edge in 1980.
Yeah.
But somewhere, the idea that he has an edge, he was runner-up at the 2015 Blackjack Ball, and the award you get is called the Munchkin Trophy in honor of somebody, I can't remember who had won the first place three times and hence was forced to retire because he's too good for the competition. So Munchkin and Grossjean are the only ones who have been restricted that way. But Richie Rich won the trophy in 2015. So, Rich, clearly you've been gambling a long time. How'd you get started? And how long was it before you could fairly be described as an advantage player?
Well, I definitely know when I started gambling, that is. It was in 1980. I was 17 years old. You had to be 18 to gamble and drink in New Jersey.
I just figured out how old he is, folks. Math, math is a play thing for me. Go ahead.
57. My friend and I decided we'd take a ride down to Atlantic City. And so we drove down there. I had two cars at the time. I had I remember all my, I'm in the car business. I remember everything by cars and dates and stuff like that. So I had a BMW 2002, if anybody knows what that is. And I also had an old Volvo. They call it an Amazon. It's a 1965 Volvo. It was painted in primer. It was like a $50 or $100 car at the time. My other car was in the shop. So I'm driving this $100 Volvo down to Caesar's Palace. Or Caesar's Atlantic City.
Caesar's World, maybe.
Whatever they called it at the time. So, you know, we get down there. Never played blackjack or anything like that before we go. And, you know, I don't know how much money we had with us. You know, maybe, you know, 50 or 100 bucks each. And we're playing for red chips. And, well, you know the outcome of that. So we went back to get our car. We parked in valet. So we go back to valet to get the car. And there's no car. And we're waiting and waiting and waiting. And finally they came, hey, is somebody here have the Volvo? And I was like, yeah, I do. And they're like, well, the key broke off in the ignition. And I knew that was a problem with those cars. They had brass keys back then. If you didn't put the key all the way in and you twisted it, it was going to break off. I said, hey, you have an extra key? I said, no, I don't have an extra key. They're like, oh, we're really, really sorry. We can comp you dinner and get you a limo home, and then we can either ship your car to you after we repair it, or we can send a limo back to your house, pick you up, and bring you down here to pick up your car.
So how casinos have changed.
Red chip player.
Yeah, how casinos have changed.
No, they didn't even know whether I played or not. They just, that was just the, so the valet just had screwed up my car, so they were trying to make accommodations, so. That was my first comp. They sent us to the coffee shop. Back then, you know, they had everything in the world on the menu, including lobster and filet mignon and wine and all this stuff. And, you know, I have this piece of paper, and we asked, you know, the waitress, I said, well, you know, how much is this worth? And she said, well, you just order whatever you want. And I'm like, wow, really? Yeah, we're ordering lobster tails and all this kind of stuff. And, you know, of course, we have no money for a tip or anything like that because we already lost it all at blackjack.
That's the other thing. Back then, a comp was a comp. Right, like you said, you just ordered what you want. There wasn't a limit. There wasn't a dollar amount. They just would give you a comp.
Yeah, it was all, well, on a comp, and then, you know, if you were RF and B, you were RF and B, like, you know, not like, you know, RF and B as long as you play. I mean,
right.
And you don't spend too much. It's RF and B. And, you know, if you overdid it, then they just, next time you came, they just said, hey, you know, you're not RF and B anymore.
Right.
So that was, that was my first experience. So we went home, left in a $50 Volvo, came home in a stretch limo. Because my parents were pretty shocked when we pulled up.
I'll bet.
And
so when did you learn about counting cards and decide to learn?
Well, that was quite a bit later, actually, a number of years later. You know, I know Bob likes to have a little sex story involved. So
you're not gonna let me down, are you?
No.
Good.
So so the rest of that story is that
I didn't realize there was more.
So I had the option of having them deliver my car to me on a flatbed, or having them come and pick me up in a stretch limo and take me to Atlantic City. Now, I lived in North Jersey, so that was at least two hour and 45 minute drive to Atlantic City. So this girl that I'd been trying to go out with, I said, hey, you want to go down Atlantic City in a limo? You know, and she was like, okay. So anyway, that was a very, very good, meaningful experience.
In the back of the limo.
In the back of the limo going to Atlantic City. And of course, we had to come back in a $50 car that was smoking, but that, you know, but then it didn't matter anymore. She never did go out with me again after that, though.
Do you think it was the car or what happened on the limo?
Maybe both.
All right. So when did you learn to count cards?
So when I was in college, I took another trip to Atlantic City. And I don't know. I had $500,000 with me. I started playing. Maybe I had $500. I started playing red chips. This is going to sound unbelievable, but it's true. Streaks, as you know, are can be absolutely incredible.
Either way,
and I'm betting red chips. I have no idea how to play. None. I tried to double on a 20 because I thought you could just double your bet. I had no idea how to play this game. Couldn't lose. Well, I didn't double. They didn't let me double the 20. They said, oh, you mean the split? And I was like, oh, well, no, I guess. Then don't double, they said. I said, oh, thank you. So, and the next card was an ace, by the way. But anyway, they started paying me in green chips. I started betting the green chips. They started betting me and paying me in black chips. I started betting black chips. I couldn't lose. They're paying me in purple chips. I decided I'm going to move to the high limit room at a $500 minimum table now that I have these purple chips. I've got five suits in front of me. And they're talking. They're on the phone. They're doing everything. They don't know what to do. I'm betting purple chips. They're paying me in oranges. And I finally, you know, if I lose two, I'm playing two hands. I said, if I lose both hands,
I'm out of here.
I'm out of here. I couldn't do it. I finally got, I was up about 20,000, and I decided, and I lost both hands, and I said, okay, I'm done. A host came up to me, who's actually still around. He's in the Bahamas now. Host came up to me, and what can I do for you? Blah, blah, blah. You know, let me know. We'll send a limo. We'll do this. We'll do that. So I went back home. I called him up. I said, I'm going to take half this money up there. Now, I went with 500 last time. I'm going to go with 10,000. This guy's in trouble. Of course, I lost the 10,000. So then I decided to go back, and I lost the other 10,000. And at that point, I walked over to the bookstore, kind of like a half of gambler bookstore and half of a peep show. And
don't bang the table.
Oh, sorry. And I bought, what was the first book
Revere,
I bought?
Stanford Wong, Humble?
No, the old book.
Ed Thorpe.
Yeah, Thorpe's book.
Beat the Dealer.
Beat the Dealer. I bought Beat the Dealer. I started reading that. And then I got interested in it. And then I started reading, you know, pretty much everything that I could. mostly, you know, Revere's book, the world's greatest blackjack book. And I mean, I never took any, they didn't have any courses back then. You just read the book and tried it out. And, you know, if you felt you were good enough, you were good enough. So I'd say it was probably about maybe 3 or 4 years into that, early to mid 80s.
So today, is it fair to call you an advantage gambler who works a little bit on the side, or somebody with a full-time job who plays advantageously, periodically, somewhat as a hobby, but at an advantage?
I've never gambled, or at least said that I've gambled for a living. I mean, I've always had a business or a job or something of the sort. I never really had a bankroll. I always, everybody used to joke about, and you've actually talked about it, but everybody used to joke about, oh, well, you have an infinite bankroll because you start with 10,000. I'm basically like a real gambler, right? I got 10,000 in my pocket, 20,000, whatever. I'll go, I'll take a trip. If I lose it, I lose it. If I win, then, you know, I win, except that I'm playing at an advantage.
Right.
So,
but if you lose the 20,000, the next time you have another 20,000.
Yeah.
Right. So. Yeah.
So, I mean, I never did it as a, you know, business where I would say, okay, well, I have to, you know, make this amount of money. I don't, you know, this is my risk of ruin and all. Yeah, I understand all that stuff. I'm not interested in doing it. I think it's, I don't know. I would never want to do that for a living.
Okay. When you're playing, what kind of cover do you employ? How much do you think it costs you to do this, and how much do you think you gain from these cover plays?
It depends what you want to call cover, but let's say one play that I've always liked to do, I don't know, I think I invented it, but maybe I didn't, is doubling on a hard 12.
For less, or?
Well, obviously for less.
Okay.
It really makes no difference, because there's certain plays that have to be called out to the pit, and they can't deal a card until the pit says okay.
Yeah.
Splitting tens, unless you've been doing it all night, then you don't say it anymore. But if a guy just walks up to a table and splits tens, they got to announce it. Well, I don't want anybody announcing I'm splitting tens. So, you know, what do you want them to announce? Doubling a hard 12. Well, nobody's going to, like, you know, come investigate you for that, right? So if I got a $100 bet out and I'm going to hit the 12, anyway, why not double for $5? It's the same announcement to the pit, and you look like a complete idiot to the guy in charge.
Yeah, the other benefit to
If it was in a position where, like against a 2 or 3, where you were only going to take one card only, if it was against a 7 or something, you wouldn't do that.
Oh, no. You don't do it that often, and you would only do it when you have a smaller bet out anyway, because if you had a larger bet out, likely you weren't going to hit that 12 against a 2, 3, or 4 anyhow.
Yeah. And
I like doing it against a 4 or even a 5 in a negative count.
Yeah. The other benefit to that is that the software they use to analyze players, at least the original versions, maybe it's changed now, but it has no distinction for doubling for less. So the software just marks you down as having doubled a 12, right? So, yeah, if you have a $300 bet and you double for $5, it's costing you nothing, and the software thinks you are, you know, a total idiot.
Right, right.
I am so glad you mentioned this, Richie. Munchkin mentioned this to me a while ago, and I felt I can never write about this because he would kill me. I thought this was a state secret, and that he has, I want him to be able to trust me with what he tells me. And now we're talking about it on the air, brought up by somebody else. I'm going, oh, this is so wonderful. Now I can write around it.
I mean, I have no idea if the software still works that way. I mean, that was 10 years ago or 15 years ago when it first came out. Maybe it's, I would think they would have corrected those things by now.
Yeah, you know, I wasn't really so worried about the software or not. What I like is the announcement that has to be made, like, for the whole you know, pit to hear
sure.
that there's an idiot at table, you know, whatever, and he's doubling hard 12s, you know. And now after a while, they're like, yeah, go ahead, whatever, you know. And I would say that's probably better cover than pretty much anything else. You know, making the wrong plays in a high count, I mean, you certainly don't want to do that. You want to do the right thing.
Do you split 10s?
I have. You know, I don't do anything as a rule normally. I mean, some things as a rule, but I don't always play the same way. I play, you know, with whatever I think that I can get away with or not get away with, you know, which is probably why I can still play under my real name, because if I'm using my real name, I try not to do anything that is going to get me thrown out.
Now, how is it possible that you're still playing under your real name when I know you've been backed off places?
Well, let me ask you this. Is being backed off count if you're backed off under a different name?
Oh, I see. So you used to play under a different name.
Or he has played at least some of the time.
Yeah.
So, you know, all this stuff about IDs and stuff like that, as you know, it's all new or relatively new. You know, right. back in the 80s, 90s, you know, maybe even early, you know, 2000s, nobody asked for any ID. Right. If you walked into a casino,
you're Mr. R
and
something,
you know, they say, do you have a card? I know, I've never been here before. You know, can I get a card? Sure. What's your name? They give you your name. They write down your address. That's your address. You know, that's you. And, you know, it was commonly known to casinos that not everybody gives their real name. Like, not just APs or bad guys or whatever, but just lots of guys that don't want to be known that they're in a casino gambling money.
Right, sure. But for like the last 15 years, you didn't have any back-offs or?
Well, I've had some back-offs, but I have not been backed off of Caesar's properties. I've been backed off of some properties that are owned by Caesar's now, but weren't owned by Caesar's when they backed me off. And it seems like I'm okay there now. Same thing with MGM to an extent, although I'm not quite sure about my status with MGM. Although they seem to like me okay, I just don't put it in their face with blackjack. You know, I can't play at a Boyd property. They really hate me. But
okay, so there are some places that you can't play, but some places where you're still
I can
under
play
your
pretty
name.
Much now that everything's been bought out by everybody else. I can play pretty much anywhere on the strip in Vegas, and I can, of course, Atlantic City can't really bar you, but you know, they will take my action pretty well at least Caesars and Borgata and.
Well, Borgata is half and, Boyd, or at least it was, wasn't it?
I don't know. Is it?
Wasn't Borgata halfway between MGM and Boyd?
I don't know. I don't remember.
Okay.
But obviously you're not in the system there as being bad, so if you can still play there, so.
I mean, I've been backed off of blackjack in plenty of places under different names, and then right. gone back sometimes even under my real name. It's funny because I'd be in a database as you know, whatever my fake name was,
John Smith, yeah,
as that being my name, and then my alias. Sometimes they'd have my alias as my real name, so they really, you know, that's good that they were that confused. I know in the Sands in Atlantic City one time, it was pretty funny. They I was sitting there playing blackjack under my real name. I don't know what made me use my real name, just because I guess I had burnt out the other names that I had.
You couldn't think of any more aliases.
I'm sitting there playing under my real name, and I hear over the paging system, they're paging another name that I use of Steve something or other, you know, Steve something or other, dial extension 86.
Yeah. that might be a clue.
I'm thinking.
That used to be a long time back. That used to be a common tactic of Griffin agents here in town, where if they suspected it was you, but they weren't sure, they would page you under your real name and see how you react. And yeah, I knew a number of guys who got thrown out that way because
they thought that was my real name. So then they came up to me, Lumpsuits came up to me and said, we know who you really are. You know, you're so and so. And I was like, no, I'm not. And they're like, yes, we know who you are. And so I said, well, you want to see my ID? And they're like, no, we don't care. We know who you are. they started. Of course, they can't tell you to leave, but they can pretty much be.
Well, but nowadays worse in Atlantic City than, like, throw you out for causing a disturbance, or they make up some other BS, to actually throw
filing
you out.
A false CTR.
Oh, yeah.
You heard about that?
No, I hadn't heard that one.
I was kind of putting it in their face in Taj Mahal one time, a long time ago, just in the 90s. And, they were just getting furious because I was in there playing, and I'd, sit down at a table and, they had to follow me around and stuff like that. And so I was like, I was getting audited from the IRS a while after that. And the auditor says to me, you ever buy chips in Atlantic City, New Jersey? And I'm thinking, well, yeah, I've played there before. And there's this report that you purchased such and such number of chips on such and such a day. Is that true? And I was like, well, it's kind of true. I mean, I didn't just go and purchase them. I purchased some, and then I played, and then I cashed out, and then I decided, oh, maybe I'll play a little bit more. And it may have accumulated to be over $10,000. Okay. And that was the end of that. Because I didn't have tons of them or anything like that. So, but I never did anything like I made that up. I didn't really do that. I never, ever cashed out for more than $10,000 in a day. I know that for a fact. And they filed a CTR on me. I mean, it's pretty unbelievable that they would go to that extent.
You know Wesley Snipes?
Well,
how do you know him? And you got any stories you can share?
Well, I don't know Wesley Snipes personally. There's an AP that we call Wesley Snipes, and we're going to call him that for the show anyway.
You might get a heads up between the time we tape this and the time it airs.
Well, the reason behind that is that, obviously he's black, African. Well, he's black. Mm-hmm. He says black. He's old enough to be black and not African American, but, he is, an African American and, excellent, talented, AP. And
very successful.
And quite successful in both advantage play and other endeavors in his life. One joke that we used to make all the time would be we'd be at a table with him, and once he would get up to go to the bathroom or whatever, we would say, "Hey, do you know who that is?" And be like, the dealers would be normally say something like, yeah, he looks really familiar. I can't think of his name. And we're like, that's Wesley Snipes. Like, oh yeah. You know? And then, you know, they, people don't really know what people look like. You know, if you tell somebody, I mean, you know,
I one time was playing in Caesar's Palace and he was at the table next to me and I don't think he saw me come in, and his then girlfriend, I think maybe now his wife,
he doesn't have a wife now.
Okay. Well, she Nor came do by, I. she came by my table and was looking at my table. And I turned around and I said to her, you know, tell Wesley hello from me. And she looked at me kind of funny because I used his real name. And she went back over, you know, and then he looked and we kind of acknowledged each other. But the dealer on my table said, is he a football player? And I said, yeah. And she said, yeah, I thought so.
Right.
You know? So, yeah. He gets
so then to make it even more ridiculous, to make it even more ridiculous, he actually looks somewhat like Wesley Snipes. I mean, you know, a lot more than you or I do, certainly. but so one day,
just for said, audience, let me know, you haven't seen any pictures of Munchkin, but he's not African American, just in case you were wondering.
Yeah. So I said the next time, instead of saying it was Wesley Snipes, we said, oh, it's Denzel Washington. Well, he looks nothing like Denzel Washington. but they believe that too. So, you know, it's amazing what people will believe as far as, you know, who you are or who you're not.
Do you have any encounters with, we'll call them, real celebrities?
I mean, I've found myself, you know, sitting at tables with, you know, with some celebrities over the years. I don't really notice people that much. It's usually somebody else that tells me, just like that. Like, I was sitting next to Jack Nicholson, and I didn't even realize it. Until they
busy counting cards.
Yeah, well, until they came up and they said, excuse me, Mr. Nicholson, you have a phone call, you know. And back then they constantly paging people, you know. So if there was anybody famous in the casino, you kind of knew it. I sat next to John Bon Jovi. I sat next to John Daly, if you want to call him a celebrity.
Well, he'd be more fun to sit next to.
Oh, he definitely takes the, you know, the eye off of you.
Yeah, I mean, if one of those people was in the casino, I would want to be at the table across the pit or next door rather than on the same table they are.
Yeah, I mean, I didn't sit there intentionally. I just didn't even really, you know, I was just saying that I just happened to be there. And, you know, of course, a lot of, you know, you see a lot of ball players and stuff like that. In casinos, and I don't like try to sit next to them, but sometimes you just find yourself there.
So are there any other things that you attribute your longevity and your ability to still play under your real name, other than, say, doubling 12? Are there any other techniques that you use to...
I mean, I don't think there's like one or two. I think it's, you know, it's a whole, you know, it's like asking Thorpe, you know, what does he attribute his excellent health and his old age? I mean, what do you do? Well, you know, he probably does everything right. You know, exercise, diet, and this and that and the other thing. So, and it's the same way, I think, that if you want to be an advantage player for 40 years. I mean, you can't do the same thing every single time and expect that nobody's going to notice. I mean, you have to be who you are. You have to be your act. If, you know, everybody says, oh, you have a great act. I don't have an act.
Yeah. Yeah,
I don't have an act. Me. It's me. Right. Oh, yeah. you're wearing a, you know, you're wearing an expensive watch and you're smoking a cigar and, you know, you're doing this and that. I was like, well, I smoke cigars because I like cigars. And, you know, I wear an expensive watch because that's like my passion is I love nice watches, which I happen to share with a friend of ours who lives in London, who said one of the wisest things that I've heard ever, and I'll quote him. Time is the most valuable commodity on earth.
Oh, yeah.
So wear a nice watch.
Oh. You know, I was at lunch with him and one of his friends, who I think you may know, that lives in Los Angeles, or at least used to live in Los Angeles. And they were both wearing a watch that I forget the long name, but it's referred to as an AP. Right, which is sort of very apropos.
It's an Audemars Piguet.
Right.
Yes. It's
an AP. So they were both wearing these, and the guy in Los Angeles, his was newer, and so our friend said, "Oh, let me see your watch." And they traded watches, and you know, they put them on, and our friend said, "Oh, well, you know, here, I'll just keep yours, and you keep mine." And he said, "No, no, actually, yours is more expensive, even though." His was newer. And he says, "Really? Mine was 46. And he goes, "Yeah, his was 48 and the other guy's was 46,000, these watches." So, yeah, they're expensive watches.
For the record, my watch did not cost 46 or 48,000.
Right. I don't wear a watch, though.
So. You know, pit bosses and casino, especially pit bosses, are they are very into what our one other friend of ours likes to refer to as the trappings of wealth, he doesn't like to wear anything that would be considered like that. And I always tell him, I said, you know, if you're gonna be acting like you can afford to lose $50,000 playing blackjack, then, you know, you probably shouldn't be wearing a $20 watch, because the guy that's maybe not the dealer, but the guy that's in charge, that it's a big deal for him to wear a $2,000 suit or a $40,000 watch or a $2,000 pair of shoes. Pit bosses are kind of like that. So, you know, they notice stuff like that. People that notice stuff like that, people that know it, they notice it. And it's, I think, a really wise investment, much more so than the clothes or anything like that. If you buy a $2,000 suit, it's never going to be worth anything. You buy a $40,000 watch, it's probably going to be worth $50,000 one of these days. So you haven't really...
Well, the other thing is, you can look like an absolute homeless person, but if you're wearing a $20,000 watch, yeah, they're going to... It doesn't matter. You can wear anything you want,
right,
shirt with holes in it, if you got a $20,000 watch on or more or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. And not to mention the fact that a lot of APs, if they're successful, end up with a pile of cash sitting around. And why not have a watch instead of a pile of cash?
There are places that you can get fake Rolexes, for example. Many people can't tell the difference. Richie, you sneer as though you can tell the difference with a glance. Maybe you can. I couldn't. Does it fool most? So instead of 40,000 watts, you have a 500 or whatever it is for the fake.
The fakes are like 50. I went in the 80s. I picked up, there was a guy who used to, at the World Series of Poker, who used to set up a table full of fake watches at the World Series of Poker and sell jewelry there. And so I picked up a fake Piaget, and I walked in and my roommate said, "Oh, where'd you get the fake watch?" Like instantly. And I said, how did you know it was fake? She goes, I know you can't afford the real one.
There's that. Okay.
So, well, you know, if you get a gold watch, you're never going to make a fake one the right color.
Right. That's what she said. If you're going to get a fake watch,
get a stainless.
Yeah.
You know, yep. Get a stainless steel watch. You know, they do make some fakes out of solid gold. But obviously, they're expensive if they're solid gold. They're not as expensive as the real one. But, you know, why are you going to pay $5,000 for a fake watch that's gold? You may as, and that's worth not even half of that in the future when you can just go pay $20,000 and get the real deal and, you know, not have to like make apologies for it. And someday it'll be worth more than that, more than likely. If
so
you buy the right
obviously
watch.
A watch collector that looks at the them as investments.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, somewhat of an investment and somewhat of a
status symbol.
Yeah. I don't really look at it as so much as a status symbol, but if you want to look at it that way, you should, you know, getting back to the original point, somehow or another, you should look and act like you're supposed to be there. You know, like you have a reason to be there.
Yeah.
Like, what reason is there for some people to be in a casino for 10 hours in Iowa or something like that? Like, you know, you have to have a reason to be there. So I don't have any reason to be there, so I don't go. Like, I wouldn't go to Iowa and, you know, try to, well, make a case for, like, what's this guy doing here, betting all this money? Like, is he a local? Is he this? Or is he that? I mean, who is he? You know, they want to know. I mean, it's not that many people don't just stumble into a casino and start betting a lot of money.
Yeah, but it's pretty easy to come up with a credible story. I mean, when I was in Iowa, my story was I was there developing some real estate.
Yeah, but just like in the rest of life, if you continually live a lie, you're going to get caught at it. I mean, just last night, I was a pit boss asked me, you know, where are you from? And I told him where I lived. And he's like, I used to live right around the corner from there. And, you know, then we started talking about local restaurants and, you know, this and that and the other thing. And I'm like, you know, it's a good thing I was telling the truth, because if I didn't, yeah. I mean, I would have been caught immediately. So, you know, unless you're telling the truth, you know, at gambling or, you know, some friends of ours have that problem with dating women on Bumble and whatnot, is they just don't have the right story. They don't want to tell them what they really do. And if they make something else up, eventually it starts to look a little bit shady.
All right, we're going to take a brief commercial break. When we come back, we're going to hear about a hooker at a bar during Frank Sinatra's last concert. So that sounds like that's a story that I'm really interested in hearing. The South Point has more than 10,000 games returning more than 99%. This is more than anyone else has. In October, the promotion is free play with a kicker. Usually free play is eligible to be picked up Tuesday through Thursday, weekly. In October, your normal free play may be picked up Monday through Wednesday, and if you pick that up, you get the same amount either Friday or Saturday of the same week. Do this 4 weeks in a row, meaning 8 free play pickups, and you get double-sized free play pickup on Monday, October 28th. The October 22nd free video poker class at the South Point will be NSU Deuces Wild. This is a 99.7 plus game, which with a 0.3 cash club is even money off the top. They do have free play they offer. They do have promotions. So you are playing with a very small edge. Every Deuces Wild game has its own idiosyncrasies. You will learn in the class how variations in the amount you get for the full house changes your strategy significantly, and the amount you get for the flush changes the amount, it changes your play significantly. We've recently started talking about predictit.org. This is a betting market where you can place a bet on what is going to happen politically, mostly in the United States, but in other places as well. We are taping this a couple weeks before it airs. We have no idea what the odds will be for example, there's various things about impeachment. There's various things about which Democratic candidate, who the Democratic candidate will be, and various other things that will change between now and then. You can buy a position. You can sell it at any point along the way. So if there's a nice run-up, you can capture that.
Right. You can trade in and out just like any commodities future contract. So all contracts are $1. So say, for example, currently the contract for will Trump be impeached by the end of the year, the no is at 60 cents and the yes at 40 cents. So you buy at the end when the contract is resolved, whoever has the winning side will get $1. And you can have up to $850 in a position on any one contract.
Well, if those are the odds, I'll take the no.
Yeah. Well, as I say, you can bet on anything and they move. And so you don't have to wait till the actual event. You can sell the contract whenever you want at whatever the current price is. So.
And we live in a divided country where people who get their news from Fox are going to have a very different position as to the people from the people who get their news at, say, MSNBC. So there's lively markets in all of these. And the fact that Richard said the current market is we're taping this a full 2 weeks before it airs. So whatever the price is when it airs may or may not be the 60-40 that Richard just quoted.
Right. Could be vastly different.
So there's a promo. If you sign up with this through the promo of predictit.org/promo/edge, what benefits do they get, Richard?
So yeah, you get a $20 matching bonus. You deposit $20, they give you a $20 bonus. You have to bet it through at least one time, and you have to wait 30 days before cashing it out. So
so it's a small benefit, but if this is something that sounds interesting to you, it actually, I have my own political beliefs. I believe I can make money in this market, albeit small amounts. It does sound like fun.
Yeah.
All right. At videopoker.com, it's the best place to play lots of games. If you sign up for the gold membership, $8.95 a month or $79.95 a year, this allows you to get correction on most of the games. In the very near future, they will have a pro membership with an additional benefits at a different cost. And we're going to be talking about this soon. We will be interviewing in the near future an employee from videopoker.com who will explain the benefits of that. The game of the week is Super Times Pay Spin Poker. Spin Poker is a 9-line per line game, so you're betting 45 coins. Super Times Pay is a 6-coin per line game, so you'll be betting 54 coins per spin. You'll be paid on the basis of 45 coins, except approximately 1 out of 15 hands, you get a multiplier that applies to whatever you get. The multipliers will range between 2x and 10x. In general, they add approximately 0.25% to the return on the game with no change in the strategy. All right, we're back to Richie Rich. You were in Atlantic City during the time of Frank Sinatra's last concert, and something happened.
I think you...
I spoil this punchline?
Well, I think that you over-anticipated how great of a story that was. It was just some notes that I wrote down. But to answer your question, I'm not sure if it was his last concert, but it was one of his last concerts, and it was in a small venue. And I love Frank Sinatra anyway, but that was a very memorable thing that I got to do, to see him in a very small cabaret kind of setting at the Golden Nugget, and you know, shake his hand and you know, tell him how much I enjoyed his music over the years, you know. And but the other part on the line was just an example of how naive I was when I started playing blackjack. Is I guess I was maybe 19 or 20 years old when I was at about 2 o'clock in the morning. I went to was getting ready to go to bed, and I said, oh, maybe I'll stop by, I'll have a drink at the bar before I go to bed. So I stopped at the corner bar inside the casino and the Golden Nugget, and this young lady started chatting me up. And she asked me where I was from, and you know, I thought this girl liked me. And you know, she says, well, where do you you know, I was like, well, what do you do? And she's like, well, I'm a working girl. And I said, well, that's great, you know, where do you work? And she's like, oh my God, where did this guy go? Fell off a turnip truck somewhere, right? He says, I'm a working girl. And, you know, I was like, oh.
I was dealing to a girl one time. And, you know, when I was dealing, I was 22, 23 years old. And she came in all dressed up, really nice looking. And so I'm dealing to her. And I was like, so what do you do? And she just looked at me like I was an idiot. And she said, I'm a lady of the evening.
So you decided it was time to dummy up and deal?
Actually, no. I had a million questions then, but...
All right. So
it was kind of like a podcast. I used to interview people while I dealt to them.
That might be why you're so good at this. Have you been to any grand openings? And as a general, how does that work for you?
I haven't been to very many lately. Although I did go to the grand opening of Hard Rock in Atlantic City, and it was surprisingly reminiscent of the grand openings of like the Mirage or Bellagio or any of those things that were, I guess, back in the 90s. But typically, every AP went to pretty much every grand opening back then. I don't know if you remember the grand opening of the Bellagio. I'm not sure if you came. That was back in the day of that BJ21.
I was not there for that opening.
So, I was.
Yeah, but you weren't invited. Because I had a party at the Bellagio in the penthouse suite catered by the Bellagio opening weekend for everybody that was in that group. And Tommy was there, and Wesley was there, and quite a number of other.
I always APs. Love it, actually, when the casino hosts a party for APs without realizing it. Our friend from London one time decided to throw this huge barbecue in Sunset Park. This was in the 90s, in the heyday of the MGM. And he got the MGM to cater the party and bring out steaks and ribs and everything to Sunset Park for a bunch of Advantage players.
Well, actually, back in the day, the MGM, I mean, that was just unbelievable what was going on at the MGM.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know what other people had other stuff going on. You know, I had a pit boss or a floor person that would write down my highest bet as my average bet and would basically keep me on the card for her whole shift, even if I was taking a nap or eating or whatever. So I got, when she worked 8 hours, I got 8 hours. If my max bet was two hands of 1500, then I had 8 hours of play at a $3,000 average bet.
I one time during the heyday of the MGM, this is late 90s we're talking about, when we used to get Tyson tickets and stuff, I came down to collect my airfare on Sunday morning, which was, you know, the normal thing, right, to get cash airfare. So I come down on Sunday morning, and the girl behind the counter says, "Don't you ever sleep?" And I said, "What do you mean?" And she said, "Well, you came in Friday, and you've got 33 hours of play."
Right.
So, yeah, it was pretty crazy back then.
But, you know, that's the thing about, you know, you're asking, well, how can you last that long? Well, whatever presents itself, you should take advantage of. So you're presented with a floor person that likes you and wants to give you a high rating. And, you know, in return, yeah, I'd give her, I don't think I ever actually bought her anything. I would give her, like, you know, a bottle of liquor from the room or favorite kind of liquor or something. You know, they would give you these crystal things or whatever, and probably, you know, Baccarat crystal or whatever, like things that I wouldn't even know what to do with. You know, I give those things to her, and she thought it was great, and she was just writing me down for that. And if you think about how much money that's worth so much more money.
Oh, God.
Than whether or not you split tens, or whether or not you get an extra, you know, whether you bet $800 or $1,000 on a hand. It really doesn't. At that point, it doesn't matter.
Right. I mean,
I just got $10,000 worth of Tyson tickets.
Right. Exactly. Right? Yeah.
Like, and I get airfare and I get this and that. As long as I don't lose at the game, it's okay.
Yeah. Right. You can play a break even game at that point. Well, you could even play with a slight negative. If they're giving you $10,000 worth of Tyson tickets, which they were,
right.
You know, I mean, I never went to one of the fights. I always sold the tickets.
Yeah, but, me too.
And airfare. I mean, yeah, to get thrown out for counting cards at that point would just be insanity.
Right. And, you know, there's stuff like that going on all over the place. And, you know.
And more than just blackjack.
Yes.
In my million-dollar video poker, I discussed the same era at the MGM where they were just loading it onto video poker players. And a lot of the $1 million I earned had to do with casino generosity and casino mistakes. So it can happen in any game. And you mentioned the beginner, when grand openings, a lot of places, they don't know the rules yet. The people in positions were an assistant before, and now they think they can do the job, and they don't really know how to handle the situation. There are a lot of cases in video poker where the games are inappropriately loose or inappropriately generous with the Theo or inappropriately this or that. The promotions are too generous. Until the casino finds out what they're doing, they're giving away the store, and they do it in the first weekend.
Yeah, I for me, my current feelings about grand openings are so many of these places now are looking for advantage players on opening day, because they know they used to always get inundated. So, you know, I think go to a grand opening and try the video poker. But if you're a table games player, I would wait at least a week. Because I know one grand opening.
Well, if you think they're looking for you in particular because you're in the database or whatever, there's a good chance they'll pick you off.
Oh,
but if you think that they're looking for your actions, then sometimes your actions aren't really even that significant. Because what I think you're looking for in a grand opening is a lot of errors. A sloppy dealer, however you feel that you can take advantage of it. My eyesight is really bad. I can't see whole cards, but somebody that could, obviously, the chances of finding a sloppy dealer are much greater.
Problem is, for example, when Maryland opened, they went around and looked at every guy sitting on third base on every carnival game and went and compared them to the database, and they threw a bunch of people out before they even opened the games, right? Just by looking at third base on carnival.
Well,
edge.
They don't like me there. I didn't last very long at Maryland.
a lot of people did not last long there. But anyway, that's why I say if you're a table games player, I think it's better to wait a few days or a week to let the games cool off a bit before.
As you said, video poker. I used to work for a guy. In the car business, and he loved to play video poker. And I kept trying to tell him, because I kept trying to tell him that you're playing a losing game. You're playing a losing game. And he's like, I understand that you're telling me that. He's like, but I've been doing it for years, and I'm ahead of the game. I'm telling you, I'm ahead. And I thought that he was just a compulsive gambler, and that he just loved to go out there and he would make up that he really was ahead, or he was extremely lucky. And actually it was none of the above. He was playing at the Mirage, and they would just give him so much, mm-hmm. to play the game. And he played like 9-6 jacks or something. And he had the card, you know, that showed him what to do. And he probably didn't play perfectly, but he played okay.
Yep.
And that with all the comps and the free play and everything else, he was actually playing at an edge, probably a greater edge than I was playing at when I was counting cards.
A significant edge that in the 90s, where they had a 0.67 club, and you could get RFB, unlimited RFB, for like 20,000 coin in a day.
Wow.
The game started out at 99.54, and they had promotions, monthly promotions, where they'd give away $400,000 to the invited guest, and you would play to earn tickets. So it was a nice time to play. We're going to have to cut Richie Rich off right now. We're nearing the end of the hour, and Munchkin and I have instituted a program called Recommended, where we each talk about something that we've come across in the last bit that we want to share with our listeners. So I have something.
Why don't you go first?
Okay. And I can take up to the end of it if you don't have anything off the tip of your hands. A week ago, my wife Bonnie and I went to a funeral memorial service, for a lady in square dancing. And the way the square dancing community works in Las Vegas is if it's somebody who's been square dancing and is liked, and they've been there for a long time, you get like 80 people who show up for the memorial service. Well, the minister who was running the memorial service didn't know the lady, which isn't that rare, and for whatever reason wasn't given enough information to work with. He did not know. He had very few stories about the lady. The family did not give him enough information. So what Bonnie and I decided is, we're going to write our own memorial service now. When we're both in our 70s, I'm in better health than she is, but you never know how these things go. So if Bonnie died now, well, I'm willing and able to lead at least a secular part of the memorial service myself. I don't know when she's going to go. I could easily be dead or have a stroke between now and then, or whatever, incapacitated. So I have to write the notes for her so that they're going to be given by somebody other than myself. And for me, if Bonnie's not capable of leading my service, but I have friends who are, including Munchkin and my brother and the various other people in other places who could, who are very competent in leading it, and especially if they had some notes to work with of, you know, this is an interesting story and this is an interesting story, and they'll edit it as they will, but they'll have something to work with. So all of us, our time's going to come someday, so you may want to consider getting ready for it.
All right. Mine is, there's a musical opening end of October, so obviously I haven't seen this yet, but I'm recommending it anyway. It's called Lizzie, and it's a rock musical about Lizzie Borden, the axe murderer.
Ah.
And I'm recommending it because it's a brand new theater owned by a group called Poor Richard's Players. And these guys have been around for quite a long time. I think 10 years. They do really quality work. So I'm looking forward to seeing that show. So it's called Lizzie the Musical. You can just Google it. And the theater is brand new. They'll be opening in a couple of... Oh, well, actually, it's right around the time this will be airing. So, yeah, you can just Google it. And that's my recommendation for this week.
When you recently were a key member of the Noises Off cast, was that run by Poor Richard's Players?
Yeah. The two directors were two of the leaders of that group.
That was one funny show, nicely presented. So I'm guessing the Lizzie will be one funny show, nicely presented.
I don't know that it'll be funny, being about Lizzie Borden, but yeah, I'm sure it'll be a quality
piece. It's a musical.
Yeah.
It's a musical. Yeah, I'm guessing it's going to be a Tom Lehrish, but we'll see. Thank you, Richie Rich. Thank you, Richard Munchkin. Go out and hit lots of royal flushes, everybody. Good day.